This is the Gartner Podcast for Supply Chain Leaders.
Hello, my name is Thomas O'Connor, and welcome to another episode of the Gartner Supply Chain Podcast, where we sit down with some of Gartner's best thinkers, innovators, and leaders to share with you the most up-to-date strategic insights and tactical tips you need to drive supply chain success. Today, we'll be exploring Gartner's Predicts program with a specific focus on supply chain technology. And joining me for this discussion is my great colleague, Dwight Klappich, the lead author of the Predicts 2023 Supply Chain Technology Report. Gartner clients, you can check it out on Gartner.com or via the link in the show notes. Dwight, it's great to have you joining us today.
Well, thanks, Thomas. Appreciate it.
Brilliant. All right. So, Dwight, if you don't mind, I'd like to kick things off by setting the table for our audience when it comes to Gartner's Predicts program. Why is it we make these predictions? And can you share an example of one of our predictions from maybe a prior year so as our audience can get a feel for what these predicts are like and what happens after we've made them?
So I've been leading Gartner supply chain technology predictions for, you know, nearly a decade now. And to be honest, we get predictions wrong sometimes. And more often than not, we get some of the predictions correct. A good example of this was back in 2015, we predicted that by 2020, you know, around 90% of net new supply chain execution applications would be for cloud-based applications. Now, back in 2015, we weren't anywhere near that number. And we kind of predicted that some applications were well down this path, like a TMS application or global trade management. But others, like warehouse management applications, you know, we weren't even close. But what's interesting, even in the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, we saw this evolution to cloud accelerate to the point now where the vast majority, very much in this range of 90%, are now going cloud, and it's cloud first. So I'll turn it back to you, Thomas.
All right. Thanks for that, Dwight. Really appreciate it. And good to get a bit of backwards insight as well, because I know we don't always focus on that. So really interesting there. But I want to pivot us now and go towards our predictions for 2023. And I know we've made five of these for this year, but if you don't mind, I'd like to look into one specifically to start. And that's our prediction that through 2026, less than 20% of supply chain management suite vendors will have adopted a composable go-to-market approach, although some will have adopted a microservices architecture. Now, I know for those who are maybe a little bit less technology focused on this idea of composable microservices, there's a lot that go into that. So maybe you could just start off with just a quick high-level view of, you know, what is composable, and then talk about some of the market implications that supply chain leaders should be thinking about and our justification for making this prediction.
We see kind of an acceleration in the transformation of traditional applications from monolithic, very tightly integrated code, but, you know, very difficult to kind of adapt and, apply to new business process. And the companies are moving towards, new architectures built around microservices that allow us to basically assemble solutions from any number of services to form a solution. And that's the composable side of this, that it can compose a solution that says, hey, for this particular need, I need these 25 services and I'll pull them together. Now, this started in enterprise-centric functions. You'll see this in some finance applications. In my space and warehouse management, we see this progressing pretty rapidly. And now we're starting to see in some other supply chain areas, like say maybe transportation or supply chain planning, them adopting this same kind of architecture. Now, the driver here is the desire for agility and adaptability. And so the allure of composability is that allow this, the supply chain management consumers to basically adapt their applications more quickly and easily by swapping components in and out. And this would be components both that they might get from their primary vendor as potentially also, using services that are outside that vendor, other services that I might want to, call in and, from my solution. you know, and this is all in that need to kind of support business change. Now, the key is you can add new capabilities here. You're not only from your supply chain vendor, but like I said before, you might be able to call something outside your system. So, for example, I might be a warehouse management application and you know, within my core application, I'm all handling all of the receiving and put away and picking tasks. But I want, you know, an enhanced rate shopping for my parcel shipments. Well, that could be a service outside my vendor that, you know, I now call from inside their architecture. Furthermore, you know, the microservices architecture allows us to then, you know, potentially extend my applications without breaking the underlying code. This has always been a problem with monolithic systems in the past. If, you know, you need something that can't be addressed through configuration, you have to write code. The minute you do that, you kind of break the product, and it makes upgrades, you know, time consuming and risky. So the key to this prediction, however, is while we see the vendors moving in the direction of, you know, rewriting their applications into microservices architecture, there are some vendors, you know, that are well down this path, like a Manhattan Associates or Reply or Jasky, you know, three WMS vendors in my space that have done this. There's two aspects to this. There's the technical aspect, which is having that microservices composable architecture. And the other aspect of that is whether or not the vendors are embracing composability as a commercial model for their business. The point of this prediction is that we think that the technical architecture is ahead of the vendors adopting the commercial model. And it's, you know, partially they want to sell you a large scale application that might be built on 200, 300 services. Will they want to break that down and say, well, I'll only sell you six of those 300 services. And then, oh, by the way, we can embrace services from outside our app. You know, that's not a technical issue any longer. It's more of a commercial issue. So that's why we think, you know, it's going to take some time for, you know, the vendors to catch up here. And bottom line, it comes down to, you know, how do they make money? How are they going to package this up? You know, how are they going to deliver these solutions? But we believe that, you know, over the next several years, you know, certain vendors, and we see some being pretty innovative here, you're going to move down this path. Now, to anybody looking at this, I mean, a couple of things that I think companies should really think about here is, you know, look at your current vendors, look at prospective vendors, you know, look at where they are in this journey. I mean, I'll be honest, there's a lot of imposters out there that say they're a full microservices architecture when, you know, we'll have one vendor's 300 service and someone else's six. We're not sure that's necessarily a microservices architecture. Dig into their roadmaps for modernizing their applications. And then you start to push back on those vendors to adapt their commercial models, you know, to move in this direction of composability that goes beyond just the applications that that they deliver. Yeah, Thomas?
Really interesting there, Dwight. And that's a lot of really good guidance for our audience. I especially appreciate the actionability there of, you know, what our supply chain leader listeners should be thinking about when they come to this specific prediction that we've made. There's a second prediction that I'd love for us to dive into a little bit, and it ties back to some of your earlier comments, you know, when you sort of introduced the predicts concept, where you talked a bit about, you know, the current economic climate that we're in and some of the challenging economic conditions that we're all facing. And so there's this prediction that you've made that by 2026, over 50% of companies deploying intra-logistics robots will have a multi-agent orchestration platform. And, you know, again, as we think about that economic climate, you know, there's this challenge for many of our businesses when it comes to robotics. Those traditional large-scale robotics investments, as funding gets more challenging, can be more difficult to win the business case argument in our organization. So would really appreciate you again, you know, giving a bit of market implications justification for this prediction that we've made, and maybe also just again define some of those, you know, maybe more buzzy phrases that we've got in there around things like intralogistics robots, multi-agent orchestration platforms.
Yeah, great comments, Thomas. I mean, so it's very interesting, again, referring back to our supply chain technology user wants and needs study. One of the questions we asked were what companies' plans were for cyber physical automation. So this is electromechanical automation, not, say, algorithms or things like that. And our hypothesis was that the number of companies heading in that direction would be pretty high. But we were shocked that 96% of the respondents said they either were already investing in cyber physical automation or they plan to invest in cyber physical automation. Now, we asked a follow-up question to that. What's driving this? Gets to your point about some of the business pressure that companies run. We said, so, well, what's driving this investment? And 66% of the respondents said that their primary motivation for looking at cyber physical automation was labor availability issues. They just couldn't find enough people. They couldn't keep them. They were having high turnover. And then it was intentionally asked as kind of a binary question. The option was labor cost or labor availability. What was interesting, when we asked that same question in fall of 2019, the numbers were reversed between labor and availability. Labor cost was the primary driver. Where now it's primarily labor availability. Well, then, as it looks to robotics, and another study that I did with Peerless Research Group last year, we focused specifically on robotics. And we found that 52% of the companies in that study said they either were or were planning to invest in robots. Now, an intralogistics robot to us, this kind of a term that Gartner's coined, are basically indoor robots, robots that operate internally. They're mobile, they're intelligent, they're adaptive, the self-learning, self-guiding. We coined the term intralogistics robotics because we're tracking about 33 different categories of robots under that umbrella. So it could be, delivery robots, goods to person robots, picking robots, on and on and on, sortation robots. Now, what was interesting in that study, when we asked the people that are already investing in robots what their plans were for the future, 86% said they plan to increase the size of their fleet. So if they started with 10 robots, they plan to add 10 more and go. And we have customers now into the thousands of robots. But another, and I think this is a more interesting data point that really relates to this prediction, is that 92% of the people said they were looking at other use cases to use robotics that would, in most cases, likely be a different kind of robot from a different kind of vendor. From that, we feel, the majority of companies over the next, 3 to 5 years are going to have heterogeneous fleets of robots, meaning, hey, I've got a robot from vendor A, another different kind of robot. So I might have a collaborative picking robot here, something doing truck unloading, something over here doing high reach put away. If I have just one robot, integrating that and orchestrating work between that, my WMS, not a big issue. Just do point-to-point integration. They have APIs and they can talk to it. The problem becomes when we get to a heterogeneous fleet of robots. Now, we originally called this category we call multi-agent orchestration platforms multi-robot, but as we started to dig into it, we realized that it's not just robots. It can be other agent, and an agent could be anything. But a good example of an agent might be call an elevator, open a door, connect a conveyor, turn the conveyor on. Basically what the multi-agent orchestration platform does is it has kind of two roles. One, to facilitate that integration and make it very easy to add in new use cases, new types of robots, and connect those into my systems, almost like, apps integration tools. But this is very different than, you're not going to use MuleSoft for this. But the other thing is starting to orchestrate the work. So I'll give you an example. We had a client has a mezzanine, a second floor mezzanine. They're using a collaborative picking robot on that mezzanine. Well, all of their packing's done on the first floor. They deployed it, and then they realized, well, hey, the robots have to get from the second floor to the first floor, and there was an elevator, but now I have to have something that'll call that elevator and say, hey, I'm here, bring me an elevator. When the elevator gets there, tell the robot, okay, you can get on the elevator and can continue on. So the key thing here is that, as you know, 90 some odd percent of companies looking to expand into more use cases, says many companies are going to start to have this problem. We already see this. Some of the 3PLs are pushing this envelope very quickly. They're using robots for all sorts of stuff. You can kind of understand they're trying to do this to support their clients. And it's really driving this. And now we're starting to see lots of companies of other areas kind of looking at this technology as well. So I think kind of if I can leave people with, you know, something here is that, you know, if you're starting down the path, if you're doing just one robot, you might do a proof of concept and directly integrate that to your current systems. But, you know, get out in front of this, you know, and this, again, where some of the 3PLs, I think, are pretty advanced. They're kind of aggressively looking at new use cases as receiving, put away, picking, moving, all sorts of things. Start to plot that out. And then, you know, as you start to add new robots, then really start to look at how are you going to kind of coordinate the work. And you're going to be looking at some of the vendors that are in this space, and SVT Robotics, a Gray Orange and their Gray Matter, AWS, RoboRunner. There are some solutions now that already provide this. So I'm going to turn it back to you, Thomas, for final thoughts.
Brilliant, Dwight. Yeah, really insightful there, mate. And, you know, there's a lot happening in the space and really good insight there on the 3PL side, that how aggressively they're going after this challenge around robotics and how they're thinking about it. So that was fantastic. Now, I know we have overall five different predictions that we've made for this year in terms of supply chain technology. Would you mind just sort of closing us out by sharing what those final three are, just quick high level, so as our audience at least knows what's there, and then we might wrap things up from there.
Yeah, so as we were looking at this, and I kind of kicked it off with going back to the user wants and needs, and that is a key study that is where kind of drives us to what do our customers want? What are their needs? What are their challenges? And we saw there that there was a few things, you know, hey, labor, as we talked about with the multi-agent robotics thing, you know, decision-making speed and quality. This is a big area, and I'd already mentioned, you know, complexity. And so a lot of the other predictions here really relate to that second thing of helping drive, you know, improved decision making. So, you know, it's like you look at things like there will be, you know, no dominant approach to addressing a digital supply chain twin. My colleague Tim Payne has done a lot of work on, you know, how, you know, the digital supply chain twin is that kind of next generation architecture for, you know, improving the decision making and planning processes within an organization. You know, again, another piece is you know, many companies, while I mentioned up front the risk was a big issue, you know, very few organizations have really been able to innate, you know, end-to-end resiliency in their supply chain. And then finally, and this is a very positive one, is that, you know, the technology is progressing to the point where like 65% of short-term decisions are going to be automated and fully autonomous going forward, where today I might have algorithms supplemented by a lot of human labor. We believe that the technology is getting to the point now where that these systems can be making autonomous decisions. So those are three. I didn't actually read the actual predictions, but those are the basic nature of those three predictions.
Brilliant, Dwight. Thank you very much for that. Really appreciate you sharing those additional three predicts that we've made associated with supply chain technology. For our audience, I want to highlight for you all that whilst we've highlighted these five predicts that are part of our Gartner supply chain technology predictions, we've got many other predictions that we're making that are publishing to Gartner.com all the time at the moment. For example, we've published recently a report on Gartner supply chain strategy predictions. So there's many others here. And of course, for Gartner clients, you can access these via Gartner.com or via the link in the show notes, as well as speak to our analysts, such as Dwight, via our inquiry service. Finally, If you've enjoyed our show today, please be sure to go to Gartner.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you've listened to our podcast and give us a 5-star rating, as well as subscribe to make sure you're notified once our next podcast is released. My name's Thomas O'Connor, and I can't wait to be speaking with you all again soon on the Gartner Supply Chain Podcast. Thank you.
Please subscribe and share the episode with your colleagues. Thank you for listening. Gartner Podcasts are a production of Gartner, the world's leading research and advisory company, equipping executives across the enterprise with indispensable insight, advice, and tools to achieve their mission-critical priorities. You can learn more at Gartner.com. All content in Gartner Podcasts is owned by Gartner and cannot be repurposed or reproduced without Gartner's consent. Gartner is an impartial, independent analyst of business and technology. This content should not be construed as a Gartner endorsement of any enterprise's product or services. All content provided by other speakers is expressly the views of those speakers and their organizations.